97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
He's a bully with $17 million in a security detail.
Quit the tough guy act. You know where to find me. Any place, cowboy.
It's common sense. You know, some things are law, and I'm all in favor of that. And some things are common sense.
And I heard a boom in my whole house shook.
This is the Reardon Roundtable.
All right, here we go for a Friday afternoon on a beautiful, beautiful day in St. Louis. First, let's say hi to Sue Thomas. How are you, Sue?
Fine, thank you.
Settling in on a Friday. It's always interesting traffic, and I'm sure we'll have that. But at least there's no rain or anything like that.
Exactly.
Because that makes things very difficult. Jane, how are you?
I am doing great.
My goodness.
It's hard to do any better.
So good to see you. We have a lot to talk about.
She's
going to spend a couple hours with us until 5 o'clock. Gene Evans is back with us this afternoon on the panel. How are you, Gene?
Great. Beautiful day.
Let's see here. You have all kinds of titles now. Political consultant for Go Consulting, former executive director of the Missouri GOP, former state rep, head of the Missouri Federation for Children, all-around great person. Am I missing anything there?
Goddess.
World queen. Traveler, goddess,
yeah, well,
right.
Yeah, what about all my titles? He never talks about my titles. Why is that?
Everybody knows those, Jane.
Oh, sure.
State Rep Steve Butts is here, too. We can put all kinds of titles on him. You look very nice today, Steve.
Thanks, Mark. I was at a nice luncheon downtown with 1,000 other people, but great to be here on a beautiful day.
You were with Tish today? Is that what I understand?
It was the mayor's awards luncheon to celebrate successful business with Greater St. Louis Inc. And a good buddy of mine, so a shout out to Brooks Gettiger, one of St. Louis's true great gems, who was one of the awardees.
Did you give her a hug for me?
I did. I said, this is from Mark.
Wow.
And she accepted it.
Wouldn't that be great? You know, I have no relationship with the mayor, but I've said this before. I know that she can be like a charming person,
she
right?
She is.
Yeah,
she
she's just crazy politically.
We used to be friends.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pop in and say, hey, if I have a visit sometime.
Jane, we should do that. We should go bring her flowers or something
oh,
and
absolutely.
Just sit down and have a good time.
Absolutely.
By the way, just as a side note, and I'm literally the only person in the whole city that cares, but I'm going to mention it anyway, because it was a year ago, I think today, it was a year ago today that Kamala came this week, and they put all the gates up around City Hall and Pelker Park, and they're still there a year later.
We're still doing the grass.
That's what they said they're doing.
It's under construction, or what's
Under repair and construction.
Under repair,
unbelievable.
Okay. Good.
Well, you know what, and this is an awkward segue, you know what's going to be under repair and construction for a long time is the state of North Carolina, and I want to start with that. There's a lot of politics to talk about, a lot of things that probably, in the whole scheme of things, aren't important to people, but what I've been seeing and hearing from North Carolina, and I just had a gut check. It was going to be just devastating. And it is. And we're getting more visuals. We're hearing more people. I don't know what to make of the government response, because it doesn't seem anywhere near to the level that it should be. Having said that, this is a very difficult situation that's unique. Now, this area flooded in 1906, so it's not unprecedented with the level of flooding, but it is like a 100-year flood. And you have people trapped in the mountains. We had audio from a helicopter pilot yesterday that said, we need helicopters because we got to drop people in, at least get them food, water. I can't believe that we're in a position, and I'll open it up to the panel, in this country where essentially you have an area that is inaccessible to a lot of people. They don't have food and water and supplies in the United States of America. That's happening.
It's depressing. And then I read things about, oh, we don't have enough money. And I'm like, how is that possible? You know, and sadly, it's been politicized. I mean, some of the people asking for relief are the same people that voted against relief when it happened to someone else. This ought to be the one thing that is not politicized. Okay, like these are countrymen. We should be doing everything we can to help them. And you know what? I think most citizens feel that way. I don't think there's anybody out there saying, "Oh, just let them hang."
Yeah.
No,
nope.
I think the people want each other taken care of, and I don't know that I fully believe that the government isn't doing. I mean, just because the president doesn't land in the middle of North Carolina, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, the governor has said that they're getting, you know, they're doing as much as they can. I mean, you're getting, what's really frustrating is you're getting conflicting information about the level of.
Well, okay, well, let's look at the optics, right?
So yes.
You have, you know, the optics of, you know, a president on the beach in Rehoboth, a vice president doing a fancy fundraiser in San Francisco. And then the next day you have the presidential candidate, former President Trump, on the ground in Georgia with supplies, also starting a GoFundMe, which has raised millions of dollars already. So optically, It doesn't look good.
Do you remember Katrina?
I mean,
do you remember Katrina?
Well, like, and even George Bush, the picture of him flying over was the one that shown, but he actually landed 2 days after and was working there, and he just got pilloried. So it's hard not to imagine that if there were Republicans actually in office right now, that there wouldn't be more attention on the lack of response. They wouldn't face more criticism for the lack of response. Now, having said that, there are NGOs, non-governmental agencies who are on the ground, they're doing work, and a lot of them do receive federal funding. But when you see it on the news, folks are saying, we're just not seeing what we need. In the meantime, they read in the paper or they hear on the news about migrants receiving money, flights, phone, food, hotels. So the optics are, well, if you're an illegal migrant, we're going to take care of you, but if you live in North Carolina, we're not. So those are the optics.
I'll give you some more optics, okay? This, to me, is stunning. If you go to the FEMA website, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, they have three stated goals. The number one goal is instill equity as a foundation of emergency management. Are you freaking kidding me? Number two, it gets better, lead whole of community in climate resilience. What the hell does that even mean? Number three, promote and sustain a ready FEMA and prepared nation. Well, guess what? You failed on number three because you weren't prepared and you weren't ready. So that's the question I have. How can an agency that's responsible for some of these things not be prepared? By the way, all the climate experts predicted that this was going to be the worst hurricane season ever. It's not. This is a terrible hurricane. But why couldn't you plan according to those lines when you had experts that were telling you that? So I think that this, I don't know how we failed this massively because of Katrina. You mentioned Katrina, Jane. Those were lessons that we should have learned.
We did learn some lessons. Now, let's say, so the optics, I'll agree, they look bad. Or the optics, how about the optics of all the people pitching together? You know, the Red Cross is always there. We've got these volunteers coming from Missouri and everywhere else the way they should be.
Right. Firefighters.
So we
police.
Need to do that. That's number one. The state of Missouri, we've got a group like that, and they're ready to go, and they went.
Right.
And they were there, as did people from Ameren. And, I mean,
that's what it's
take. Always been that way. I think the difference here between, you know, any type of help to migrants or anywhere else, this area that's especially affected is just inaccessible in large movements. It's not like they can get a whole bunch of trucks in there when the roads are out. Yeah, I you would think in a country like this, though, within a week, we could mobilize, I don't know how many helicopters, but with our military and everything else, we can get it there.
It doesn't feel like it's a priority. That's how it feels. And I think people across this country feel that. Americans feel like they are not the priority. And Americans who are hurting, and I am a small government person, but this is one of those situations where you do need the government. When you have a catastrophic event like this, 100%, take my taxes, help these people out. And I think most Americans agree with that. But
except you had 18 senators that were Republicans that voted no on FEMA relief for this hurricane. You have Republicans who have voted against the package. That's a really bad
optic. How did they vote? They haven't even been in Washington. How did they vote on this package? They had money that was allocated earlier this summer.
They haven't been there to vote this week.
It just says last week, Congress approved a $20 billion for FEMA's disaster relief as part of the stopgap spending measure, and there were a ton of Republicans that voted against that.
Well, I'd have to look at the particulars of that.
That's because they're spending all their money on housing migrants.
I mean,
they want to see, and because their website says equity instead of
that much comparison, and FEMA's website should say the first and only priority is deliver emergency need to U.S. citizens when
ASAP.
A natural catastrophe, earthquake, flood,
especially one of biblical proportions.
And no congresspeople, senators, or representatives ought to be voting against it, ever.
Well, they can't justify it. The money's being wasted.
Yeah.
It's
you
being
know
wasted.
As well as I do that people vote against different legislation for different reasons. I don't know the particulars of that.
When you talk about optics, I mean, but when you talk about optics,
fair enough.
you have to be fair.
The hurricane.
Here's one thing that I am concerned about.
They haven't been there.
Getting off the optics for a second. I think that what's going to really be bad for optics is we had audio yesterday from a woman who said that there were, I don't know that this is true, but I'm going to say this, and I said yesterday that this has not been vetted. I don't think anyone knows if it's true. She said there were 900 bodies in Asheville that had not been accounted for. I think the death toll here is going to dramatically rise.
Yes.
Whether those 900 bodies are there or not, they have a lot of people who have been just, you know, they've gone down rivers or roads that became rivers, and you've had avalanches and other things along the mudslides, I guess, and things like that, roads that are washed away. So this is going to get really, really bad. Now, I don't want to boil this down to politics because it's so much bigger than that, but we have to be honest about the fact that there are implications in North Carolina for this election. It's only 4 weeks away. There's going to be people,
how are these people
potentially
vote?
That couldn't
not
vote.
Not going to be able to vote.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, and right. How is it that we're this far out from the storm and we don't know how many people have died yet?
Well, Jane, that's because you can't get to them. I think that's part of the problem.
And that's correct. A major
communications
problem.
Were cut off. Right. Their cell phones weren't working. Electricity wasn't out, so you couldn't charge your phone. I mean, there's a lot
of
issues.
Where are the bulldozers? Where are the, you know, I mean, I don't know. It just seems to me that, you know, I agree that we could be doing more. And I think that there should be more people on the ground, more equipment, more.
But you know, Gene, the other thing that's going to happen here, let's say that there are people, because we already have a divided country, and people are going to argue about this, no matter if people in North Carolina can vote or not. So now we have a situation where it looks like that might not be completely feasible for people. What do you do to make it, you know, so everyone can vote and you can count these votes within a reasonable period of time on election? But I bring it up because, you know, people, let's say North Carolina doesn't go to Republicans. Well, there'll be all kinds of complaints about that. Maybe legitimate complaints about the ability
Georgia,
to vote.
So like these rural areas tend to be very red and they tend to have very high turnout when Trump is on the ticket. So you're talking about counties and areas in these disasters, not just in North Carolina, but also in Georgia, where those votes could swing the election.
Doesn't that mean we might not know the result? I mean, even if this wasn't in play, we still might not know the results right away because
we don't want to disenfranchise these voters, right? We need to make sure that they have an opportunity to vote. But if I don't have running water, electricity, or food on the table,
I'm not
running off to vote.
You know, and just real quick, so we've got a lot of, I'm saying Jeff City for sure, there are a lot of Republicans that only want elections on election day. That's it. No early voting, no mail-in ballots, no excuse voting. I'm like, so if any type of thing like this might happen on election day, you know how many people would be disenfranchised? I mean, so this is an argument, I think.
Make
God
it easier.
God bless those people, but early voting,
make it easier.
Early voting.
Well, look, I'm not in the camp with those Republicans because I think you should make it easier within a reasonable
period
of time.
Days,
but guess what? A lot of them aren't going
to
have IDs. Are people going
to
lose their minds because these people don't have IDs?
There's so many questions. It's going to get complicated. Hang in there. It's a Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon. Oh, yeah. We're getting into the weekend here. Jane on the panel, State Rep Steve Butts, Gene Evans as well. Or should I say Knucklehead Steve Butts? Can we call you a knucklehead just like Tim Walz? What did you think of the Veep debate, Steve? I'll let you start on this one.
I'm glad you're going to let me start on Mark, because I did it two ways. I listened to it live on the radio, and I thought, this is my first hunch, I thought the first question out was a brutal first question. Would you authorize a preemptive strike against Iran, you know, to help Israel? I'm like, holy cow, no 1 minute opening remarks. And to that point, you know, Walz had to go first.
Yeah.
And so he just answered the question, tough question. So that whole deer in the headlights thing, I'm like, are you kidding me? So this whole thing that you think they're
on the
inside
awkward.
Giving them the questions, they didn't give them that question, not
no
first.
Easing in,
and did not have the 1 minute who you are. Then, of course, JD, he's terrific, right? He's a good debater. And then he uses the first minute to introduce himself to America.
Anyway. Yeah.
And he
still answered the question.
So he did, and he did. So I would say so glad you asked me this, because when I heard your analysis, I'm like, this was, I thought, one of the best substantive high-level debates. Normally, these things to me, they're dog and pony shows. Nobody answers questions. They had a good back and forth.
I liked
the way they called each other Tim and JD. I liked the way they shook hands. Yes. I liked the way
the wives came on afterwards.
They were adults.
I liked all of it, and I thought that was terrific. Yeah, were there bad moments? I would say the worst moment, which you didn't emphasize, when Vance can't say Trump lost the election.
I don't see how
any of y'all get past that. I mean, to me, that's just, you got to get past it. And I know they're like, well, if he says the truth, then, you know, I guess Trump will throw him off the ticket.
The polling on that, if you look at the polling on that, majority of Republicans and almost 50% of Democrats think that there were problems in that election.
It's not what you're saying. Were there problems? Some.
Of course.
Well,
some. Did it move the needle?
No.
Okay.
Did it move the needle?
And
to the point. Then I phrased it incorrectly because I was shocked when I saw the numbers. And I've seen that polling a couple of times, that good number of Americans think that maybe Biden didn't really win. They don't like January 6th. They want to move on. I agree with you, but I don't think that that is as big of a bite. If you were hung up on his answer to that, you were never going to vote for that ticket.
Did it change everybody's mind? I don't think so. I'm just saying, I thought it was at that high level. I thought it was a pretty substantive debate, right. And I liked the tenor, and most of them, you know, both times they did kind of answer the questions.
Well, J.D. Vance is the face of the new Republican Party.
My scorecard was, and Steve, I'm going to agree with you. I thought that J.D. Vance pretty much smoked him on everything except for two issues. I think the abortion issue he did not handle very well, and I think that that's not going to go well for Republicans. Look, I was, my wife was talking to a good friend of ours who's in North Carolina. Her husband's very conservative. She is too, the wife. She ain't voting for Trump because of that issue. Now, I don't know how many people are going to be like that. But also, he didn't handle the stolen election question very well, Steve. I would agree with you. And I don't know, to your point, Gene, yeah, that's not going to probably affect Republicans. But if he would have said something in the other direction, of course, then it becomes the big story of the debate. I don't know how you handle that. I'm not a stolen election guy. I think we should move on and sort of focus on this election. And that's basically what he said.
If he wants to be the face of the new Republican Party, he needs to get out of the past and that nonsense.
But to Gene's point, a lot of people don't trust the process.
But they're not going to vote for Kamala.
Right. But in fairness, Jane, I have 20 minutes of a montage of people on your side calling 2016 illegitimate.
Right. Going back for years. I mean, that is. So, but J.D. Vance was able to articulate conservative positions. He introduced himself to the American people, who many of whom had only heard that he was this evil, whatever, making fun of middle-aged cat women or whatever else they had said about him. And I think he came off very well, both for himself and for the ticket. Does it move the needle? What I think it moves the needle on is I don't think we really have undecided voters in terms of which candidate. I think they're undecided on whether they're actually going to vote or not.
Yes.
Right.
So
they're deciding.
And so if they hear that and they're kind of like, I don't really like Trump, but he picked this guy, and this guy seems really normal, and he's young, and he's a new generation, and I understood what he was saying, and he's not. Maybe I can, you know, hold my nose and vote for Trump because I really don't like Kamala. But if they are leaning towards Kamala, it's not going to bring him back. Like that's just.
I just don't think people care that much about the VP. I think
they do when people are shooting at the presidential candidate, you know, every 3 months.
Maybe. I mean, or that he's old and decrepit. But I mean, you know, I think that it, you know, Kamala, like nobody went off of Joe Biden because of Kamala. I don't think the vice president.
Okay, well, yeah, traditionally this doesn't change anything.
But I also
think the margins are so narrow, though, to Gene's, I think it may have
maybe,
an impact.
Maybe, but I also think that people did like the tenor of the debate. I have to agree with Steve.
Everyone I've talked to.
Everyone. It didn't matter what side you were on. You were like, this is how adults act.
Several people. We probably all did. And I've heard national people say the same thing on, you know, some of the panels in the aftermath of the debate. People were saying, wait a second, why can't these two be at the top of the ticket? Yeah. Although I don't think I'd give you that on Tim Walz. And he did better as the thing moved along.
Yes.
But then you get to the Tiananmen Square question, and it was awkward, horrible. He lied. I mean, he's caught in the lie. He doesn't handle it well. He calls himself a knucklehead. That was weird. You know, he wants to call people weird. That was weird.
No, it was weird. I don't understand. It's not just Tim Walz on that example. There's lots of examples of these people that embellish their life stories. To what end? It's easily verified. I'm like, I don't know why he just didn't say,
you get nervous,
I lied,
and you say something stupid, right.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I need to move on, and I have moved on, and that's not me. I get how you can say that, but he did that long 90-second,
yeah, it didn't work.
I'm from Nebraska, and then I'm a football coach and a teacher thing. I'm like, yeah, but you weren't at Tiananmen Square when you said you were. I just say that.
Well, that was the only thing they called him out on. He's got other things, too, that they could have, but he didn't handle it well. They didn't press him too hard, but they did let him sink. And oftentimes, these commentators sort of rescue the Democrat candidates.
Well, Gene, let's talk about that, because this was another situation. I didn't enter this debate thinking it would be any other way, because I know Norah O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan, what they're all about. But it was so obvious when they, you know, they come out of the gate with the climate, you know, question. It's not about the people who need help in North Carolina. It's about climate change. And then they have to, you know, Nora's got to say something at the end of that exchange. And when J.D. Vance had to correct them, look, we can talk about this right now because it is a Kamala, you know, magic wand that makes the people, the Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, legal, because it's a paperwork check. That's all it is. So they came here illegally. Can we just call it the way it is? You can get into semantics and, you know, if you're a moderator on a national debate stage, you can make your point. But J.D. Vance had every right to say, look, here's the clarification on that. And I don't know if that resonated with the American people, but he was right about that.
He was. He's 100% right. I'm glad that he at least got some of that in. And, you know, we have a mutual friend whose daughter was killed in Haiti by these gangs. And he's been there several times. He's a state rep. Coming back on these planes, he said, he told me, he's like, Gene, they are scooping up Haitians that they have not vetted. They are gang members. They are, I'm sure there are good families in there too, but there is a zero vetting process for coming from what is arguably one of the least civilized places.
Really? On the planet.
And living a completely different lifestyle. And they're just bringing them in, giving them legal status, and then plopping them down here in the middle, in some of these areas where there's just overrun by people who don't really have a way to sustain their lives and don't, you know, and we don't know anything about them. So you could have 50 great families, but if you've got one maniac in there, it just kind of spoils the whole bunch, right? Because they're going to do their thing. And so we've got to do a better job of vetting. I was so glad he said that. I bet there were many, many people who heard that and had no idea what he was talking about. It's the first time they've ever heard it.
Of course. But I think this goes to everything else we talked about earlier. You know, I've said this a few times where I think there's a lot of people, and this may be the deciding factor in the election. There's a lot of people that are looking at all of these scenarios, whether it's across the, you know, the other side of the planet with what's happening in Israel or Ukraine and the billions of dollars. And I know that we've always shipped money and a lot of these comes in arms that do result, even our community here. With Boeing, right? But the perception is, and the optics, if we go back to that word again, is there are a lot of people in this country, and this is going to be, I think, amplified with North Carolina, that feel like, hey, we're the taxpayers. Where are we being prioritized?
Right.
We see the migrants being prioritized. Right? They're getting hotel rooms in New York City. We're seeing Ukraine being prioritized in Israel. What about the American people? And I think that is a strong, strong issue right now moving into the next few weeks.
It is. But when you take a look at, you know, I think you have to also have a longer view that say we do have a national security interest in what happens in Ukraine. We most certainly do with what happens in Israel. So, you know, I don't see how you can combine those two things. Yeah. American citizens, when they're in need, should be at the front of the line. I don't deny that at all. Our immigration process, it's been messed up for a long time. It doesn't appear that in Springfield, Ohio, though, it is as bad as was initially, you know, came out from the Trump debate.
Well, I guess it depends on who you talk to there, and I don't think any of us know what it's really like there on the ground. But I've got to push back on this. It's been bad for... We have never had this many migrants coming across. We have never seen this kind of crime, including a local police officer who was killed by an illegal migrant. Mm-hmm. We have never had it this, and the hundreds of thousands of murderers, rapists, sexual assaulters that are here that they know about. That's the ones they know about. And they're like, well, they've come in over here. Who cares when they came in? Get them out of here. And don't tell me they're sitting in our jails. I don't even want them in my jails. I don't want taxpayers paying for them. Get them out of this country. They don't belong here. They're criminals. They do not belong here.
And he should have been gone. And the guy who killed the cop, he committed his crime in 2020 in the Trump administration. Tim Lomar in St. Charles sent it to Homeland Security and never heard another word. So there's been plenty to go around on that. But I agree with you. I don't want to pay money for a trial for this guy. I don't want to pay for him to be incarcerated.
Amen.
I don't want any of that.
Because he's not entitled to those.
There should be a fast track, plane, bus, whatever it is, out of Dodge. I get that it's impossible to deport everybody at the same time, but why can't we start with criminals?
Thank you for being on our side here. I appreciate that, Gene. Thank
everybody,
you.
That would pull at 99%.
Absolutely. Gene Evans, Jane Duker, Steve Butts, all on the panel. Let's just talk about the Senate landscape, which might be getting interesting. I was watching the Brewers in the Mets game last night. Unfortunately, I wasn't happy with the result. I was rooting for the Brewers, but there were national ads that were running during that game last night, and I don't know if it was maybe a regional thing because, you know, you could have the middle part of the country and not the coast affected, but they were running ads both sides in Wisconsin for the Eric Hovday and Tammy Baldwin. Tammy Baldwin is the Democrat incumbent up there. And there's interesting reporting today, even by Axios, not exactly a conservative publication, the Democrats are nervous about that Senate race. Well, let me tell you something. If that Senate race is close and it might go to Hovday, that's going to mean Trump's going to win Wisconsin.
And she did not appear with Kamala Harris when she was in town. So, Tammy Baldwin?
Tammy Baldwin, yeah.
Yeah, did not appear there. So Yeah, that's my understanding. They're basically within the margin of error up there. She's got way more money, as they do in most of these Senate races. The Democrats have more money. Harris has more money. They're way more money on the Democrat side this year as far as all these elections, but Republicans are going to win Montana.
Well, look, McCormick did a debate last night, and I hear he did very well as well in Pennsylvania.
And he's a great candidate.
He's better than Oz, right?
Right. And it's so hard to know with this polling. I mean, if you say, well, if you compare to how off they were in 2016, well, hopefully they've changed their polling. But one of the things I've noticed it here in some local races we've polled, but also looking nationally, they seem to be under-polling white men. And my guess is white guys are probably just not doing the poll. It's not that they're not going to vote. They're just like, I don't have time for this crap. It's none of your business. And they tend to show up for Republicans when time comes. That could make a difference. And there are a lot more early voting. The early voting thing has evened out, so there are more Republicans voting early. Is that going to translate to wins? I don't know. I do know the Democrats have now and have for a long time have a much better ground game. So no matter what the polling is, when it comes
that's
to
one
the
of my concerns, that Trump does not have the infrastructure with the ground
not.
Game, and that worries me.
Especially in swing states.
Yeah, I know.
Both, whether we're talking Missouri or even nationwide, we do have a better ground game. That's for sure. The polling thing, I'm like,
I'm just saying
it's over my pay grade, but I'm like, it's so wrong so many times, and it's right occasionally. I'm like, I don't even get the point of polls. So I'm sure I'm an outlier politically on that. But, you know, when you say I get them these unsolicited text messages, do I want to take your poll? I block it, block it.
I tried to take one. I got a text a couple of days ago, and I've been blocking and deleting too. But one of them I pressed, okay, and it said Missouri issues. So I pressed the link, and then it never took me to the actual poll. So you wonder if the technology is even working all the time there. Let me, just before we get to a break here, we have one more segment to go, but I just have to talk about our elections in Missouri, because is there a governor's race, Steve, or anything else going on?
I was just in a fundraiser with Crystal Quaid last night, and a lovely event.
Who's she?
She's the Democrat runner, but nobody else knows who she is. Okay, I'll tell you what, Democrats know who she is. Republicans know who she is.
Yeah,
normal voters don't know who she is.
Considering we've been unable to be successful statewide for a good long while, this woman is an exceptional young woman. She has been 8 years in the House. She's been the longest serving minority floor leader. I like everything about her, and I've been pushing her hard for a long time. She's a unique, highly qualified individual who comes from rural Southwest Missouri running as a Democrat. I mean, there's just
Gene, do we like her or not? Do we like her? I don't know, because I don't know her. I'll make you.
She's
you
a
make
friend
the call.
Of mine. Okay. I like her personally.
So we like her. Okay, she's just crazy.
I don't
like Tish.
Her,
okay.
Her views. And you know,
Jane, do you usually, you're being suspiciously quiet on this.
No, I mean, I don't think it's going to be. I think it might be closer than usual, but I think Mike Kehoe wins.
I think Kehoe wins by
15.
Back to the polling. We've seen polling in some Senate districts where Kehoe is outperforming Trump by 4 to 6 points. So
I believe that.
Yeah, I believe
that too.
And also way more
and
money.
Should.
And he had that primary, so his name ID is way up there. So
yeah, you were just talking about money. You know, how much money does Kehoe have in this race versus Crystal Quaid?
Yeah,
way more money.
Maybe
more
20
money.
Million to 1 million, something like that.
But is he even having to spend it?
This guy's taking the election so seriously, you cannot talk to him about anything after
okay,
November.
Okay, well, good. I mean, that's
he
a smart
is,
tactic for sure.
He's not hiring staff. He's not talking transition team. He's not talking policy. And if you bring it up, you get shushed.
You know what? Good for Mike Kehoe. I love that. Yes, thank you for telling me. I was unaware. Hang on. We got one more segment to go. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday afternoon. I went a little deeper here on the Led Zeppelin tracks for the bumper music on a Friday here with Custard Pie. Love this song. Steve, I saw you kind of bouncing around over there as a rock and roll fan and guitar player. Steve Butts is here, Gene Evans, Jane Duker, all on the panel. I'll let you start with this one, Steve. We have now unarmed ambassadors roaming downtown with St. Louis police officers or to compliment them in downtown St. Louis to do something about the crime. Is this a good idea?
Very good idea. So Wednesday I was downtown to help somebody vote early, which, by the way, you can vote early if you have an absentee thing. So get downtown and vote.
What about the vote often part of that?
No.
Okay,
not just vote your one time.
Checking.
So I did not know the program existed yet. I see these two uniformed guys standing on the corner at just walking down, Market. And I'm like, what are you guys? And they said, we're this new program. We just walked downtown, help people, have a show of sanity, security, and if tourists need directions, we're here to help. I'm like, this is a great idea. Then I saw it on the news that night. I've been downtown all day today. I saw two on bikes. They are uniformed. Okay, they're not armed. But my biggest thing, when you need to feel safe, and I come downtown a lot, when you see no one on the sidewalks.
No, that's not good.
That is never good. Just this summer. It's not a lot, but it's noticeable there are people, and I'm talking normal times downtown from 7 in the morning till after ball games. You do see people on the sidewalks. It makes me feel better. The presence of these guys, they're not patrolling. They're not cops. They are uniformed, and it gives you a sense of security. It's worked in other cities. They use this in New York City. If you go, they have it all the time. If you're in London, everybody's unarmed, and it works. It's nice to see some semblance of security when you look down the street and somebody on the street.
Okay, Jane, you go now.
I mean, it's fine, but it's like, okay, you're spending $5 million on it, and, you know, and it's only enabling the mayor from, you know, putting police on the streets. I mean, this is a panacea for something, and then, you know, just wait till one of these guys gets shot, and then everybody, you know, is going to freak out because they don't, and good for them. They shouldn't work after 11 because it's not safe. And so, I mean, I think this whole idea that, oh, we're going to pretend it's safe. And they even admitted it. They said it. Oh, we want to give the illusion that it's safe.
Optics matter.
And I'm like, I guess they do. But, I mean, until somebody gets shot.
How do they convince people to do this job if they're not armed?
I mean, how much are they paying? You say $5 million. How much are they paying the ambassadors?
I don't know. I think ambassadors are great.
It's fine. I was just in Paris. They have ambassadors. You know what else they have? They have people. They have armed people walking around with ARs.
Yeah, military. That's right.
I mean, they are everywhere.
Adequate policing.
That's Paris. London doesn't have that.
Right, but it
made me feel safe.
Exactly. In New York, you can't
Barcelona
go 5 feet
when
without
I was there.
Seeing a cop.
Anywhere in Italy. I mean, most European, you know, countries have something, especially at the airport and at the train stations. But they also have very fluid borders. You know, they don't, like, we have... Even though our southern border is very open.
Open borders.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we have ocean on either side of us, where most of these countries are surrounded by other countries. So at the train stations, airports, they do have a significant armed presence. And when you first see it, you're kind of like, whoa, because you're not used to it. But after that, it's just part of the scenery. You don't feel threatened or scared. It's just, you know, it's like, well, I'm glad they're here because I do feel... People are less likely, especially to women. You know, if somebody pulls out a knife or a gun, I'm just going to give them whatever they want. But if they know somebody around the corner could have an AR, they're less likely to do that. That's why the presence matters.
I agree.
I don't have a major problem with this. I do share some of the concerns that Jane mentioned, though, about giving the mayor, you know, the leeway. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, Steve, here's an optics thing for you, because if you want to look at priorities, that should be public safety, one of the priorities. But what do I hear this week? I hear about reparations. A city committee says, you know what, we got to dole out checks. That's just nonsense. It never gets called out. They actually take it seriously. It's not serious. We got 250 million sitting in one bank account, 500 in another, whatever the numbers are.
$42 million budget surplus, and they're bragging about it. And I'm like, and we are still over 400 cops short.
Yep.
Why don't they give all these families a voucher to go to any school they want to do? That'd do a better way to do reparations than writing checks.
The city's not going to do that. We're not going to do reparations checks. It's not going to happen.
It's not constitutional.
It is just not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You know, the thing on the cops, I want more cops. The cops, I support them, but we also don't have people wanting to become cops, not just in the city of St. Louis. People don't want to be highway patrol
dudes.
But
they don't want to be county cops here. You can't even compare the city and the county.
I can because they're all short-staffed because people just don't, young people don't want to be cops. And
you know why? Because you have a board of aldermen and a mayor who hate police more than anyone else.
And all over America, that story is true. So every mayor in every city hates the cops?
No, I don't think so. No, they don't.
Ours is actually that much worse.
I don't think Eric Adams hates the cops, just the FBI.
Right. Yeah, he don't like the feds. Right.
He's not going to like the jail guards prison guards either.
He should come here where it's easy to get past the feds.
All right, Steve, I'll start with you on this one again. Look, I'm the biggest baseball fan on the planet, and I've been a loyal St. Louis Cardinals fan since right around 1980 when I moved here in 79 and was blessed with that World Series and several appearances in the 80s. And, you know, the team was a little better this year than it was last year, but we have higher standards here in St. Louis, and they hold a news conference on Monday. By the way, I have Bernie Miklas coming up at 5:07. I can't wait to hear Bernie's thoughts on all of this, but it does seem like they were announcing a reset, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if it's a rebuild, but it's going to take a while, and it's going to be probably a little painful. I don't know. I want to ask Bernie about the Royals. I don't know how the Royals did. You know, they lost 106 games last year, and they're in the playoffs right now against the Yankees.
Yeah, okay. So I'll take the Cardinals' lifetime record over the Royals any day of the week. I got a son-in-law who loves the Royals. I say, I love the Royals, too. That's my favorite minor league team, but not this year. Not this
year. I'll root for them.
That being said, we do have, for a mid-market team like we are, we do have unrealistic expectations, but I think we've proven they can be met. There are going to be some down years and down times, but the press conference, I think, was really the issue. You talk about optics
tone
and tone deaf.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know.
Holy cow. I mean, your fan base is disgusted. Mo had to go. I mean, he had to go and said, hey, you know, we've had some success. We've lost our mojo, no pun intended.
Yeah.
We're going to hire this new guy. Yep, we're going to rebuild from the inside going out. We're going to get back to being competitive baseball.
You know,
this year alone, yeah, we were a little bit better, but I'm like, really, if Goldschmidt and Arenado would have hit,
I mean, you can't keep watching these players who are failing here go to other teams and have success.
And not fail. And coaches.
Yes, and coaches. And so that's when you come back and look at the organization. If you're running any organization, much less a sports organization, and your employees are going somewhere else and having great success, eventually you got to look inside and say, what are we doing wrong that they weren't successful here? And guess what? These free agents are not going to want to come here anymore. Arenado's like kicking himself that he stayed.
Right.
They're not coming back.
You know what concerned me is you have, I think what fans want to see, we don't expect perfection. We have high standards, and I don't want to lower our standards, because
right,
that's not a great thing.
Right.
But the lack of acknowledging the depth of the problem and
right,
the and
I agree.
The and that's I think
we
what
want
is frustrating
an
people.
Entertaining form of baseball, and we haven't had that. And
right,
you know, you mentioned, look, Mike Schilt's in the playoffs right,
right
now.
Right.
Yep. Right.
I mean, how dumb do we look? I mean,
pretty
you
dumb.
Know, yeah, pretty dumb. And you know, you may have five reasons why we shouldn't feel dumb.
And we have the best closer in baseball.
Right. And it's not working.
Right.
So I just, yeah, I agree. I think we have more than just a pipeline problem. I do think.
Well, I think they know that. I don't know that they're admitting it. Look, the Athletic article that came out a week ago by Katie Wu was devastating. It really was. And a lot of, you know, anonymous sources, but there were people inside the organization that were repeatedly saying, oh man, we didn't know it was this bad, but it is this bad.
Well,
and that's the recognition. Now, they did fire Turner Ward today. That's the hitting coach. I don't know if that's a sacrificial lamb or not. We'll talk with Bernie about that a little later. But this also has impacts on downtown Ballpark Village.
Yes.
And there's going to be, you know, Mr. DeWitt said they want to improve the game day experiences. Well, improving the game day experiences would include winning.
Right.
And
yeah,
that's where I think the tone deafness came, because there's going to be empty seats if they don't prove otherwise next year.
I split season tickets, and I'm telling you, it was tough to get rid of them the second half of this year. Yeah, the game day experience, the experience of Cardinal baseball, going to the game, bring your
right
kids. It's wonderful. I love it. I've loved
right
it since I was five.
We all do.
Doggone it, the team just stinks, and this is more than 2 years, and we're on a trajectory in the wrong direction.
And the question I have is, why is Mo not on the chopping block? Please explain to me what, I mean, I'm like, dude,
well,
you're a big boy.
He's like, had a level of success over mm-hmm his career here, and, you know, the DeWitts have stood by him. I like Mo personally.
Right.
Some people don't. I like him. But it does seem weird, because you're handing it over to this guy anyway, this Heim Bloom. I don't know who's really going to make
Band-Aid
the decisions
off
in the next
yeah
year.
Yeah.
Right. So,
rip it off. Well, just look at how they handled Jordan Walker. I mean, that is the epitome of how messed up this thing is. Oh, he's going to play. No, he's got to be down there to play every day. Then we bring him up. Oh, he's not going to play every day. Oh, we're going to send him back down. I mean, this guy's one of the most talented young athletes
is
in
he
all of baseball.
Well, we'll see about that.
Is he?
You know, that's the other thing.
Is
there's
he
questions now.
I don't
now
think so.
Yeah, he's certainly not a good outfielder. I think that we know. Steve, good to see you.
Thanks, Mark.
Gene, great to have you back on the panel.
Good to be here.
Jane, I put up with you as usual, but you're going to hang out in the next hour.
I am.
And I appreciate that. We're coming back, 4 o'clock hour, wrapping up a Reardon Roundtable for a Friday.
Get more at 971talk.com.